This is the Alternative Media with your host, Patrick Slattery. And we are here with Andrew Anglin of the Daily Stormer. Welcome, Andrew.
It's great to be here.
It's great. It's great to have you here. And that wipeout music, I think, are we headed for a wipeout here with in 2016 with all these things that are going on? It's just amazing. Just at the end of the last hour, I was talking with Don Advo, and you know, we were talking about, we're from an older generation, you know, late 50s, 60s, and the first time I looked at your site, I didn't know what to make of it. Dr. Duke had told me to look at it. He said, this site is, you know, it's getting all this traffic, and it's making these inroads, and young people are looking at it, and you know, I didn't know what to think of it because it's so over the top. And, you know, I have to say, I didn't even know the term trolling. I didn't know what that meant until maybe a year ago. I mean, it just wasn't in my vocabulary. So it initially was, I just didn't know what to think. And these, you know, you use very harsh language. I try to be very careful with my language, but, you know, the thing is, you're making such great inroads, and after looking at your site for a while, you know, I first of all, I found myself laughing out loud. I guess that's what the whole LOL thing is supposed to mean. I really found myself laughing at a lot of things. I, you know, just recently when you were describing Ted Cruz, and you know, everybody hates Ted Cruz so much that no matter how pitiful he is, that nobody can feel sorry for him. Just kind of. Just everything over the top, but hilarious. And
yeah, I laugh when I write it too. So
sure you must. And I think we, you know, in a lot of ways we share a sense of humor, even though I don't express it. I'm more of a consumer of the humor than a producer of it. But you know, I started realizing that what you're doing, you know, is just pushing back, just taking a ramrod to the walls of political correctness. And what, you know, Dr. Duke and I are always saying, well, you know, we always say, we don't want to be, caricatures. We don't want to be the caricatures that they paint of us, you know. But of course, what you're doing is mocking the caricatures, it seems, and, you know, having a great effect in doing it. So, tell us about your philosophy and you know, what you're doing and what it is to troll and what a troll army is.
Well, the basic philosophy is that you can't try and follow the rules that have been presented to you, that you have to follow this political correctness in order to be accepted by the mainstream, because you're going to get called a Nazi and all this stuff anyway. So then how do you approach that? Do you actually act like a Nazi that they're painting you out to be? I mean, that wouldn't really work very well, because I don't think anybody likes this. So what you do is make fun of what I've done is made fun of the entire image, this, like you say, a caricature that they've presented of, you know, the white supremacist neo-Nazis. And I think that.
And to the point where you even request to be described as a white supremacist neo-Nazi.
Like, yes, I do. In interviews, yes, they ask me how I identify, and I say that because and they know that they know. I mean, I talk to these Jewish journalists, and they know as soon as I say that, like, well, this guy, you know, he's coming at us with something that we don't really know how to respond to. And I mean, that's what, cause they, you know, when I get media attention in the Washington Post or whatever, I mean, they'll print statements that I've made and they're like, well, what is going on? Is he serious? Is he, what is happening? Because they, you know, they're looking at it like I think a lot of them actually believe in this, caricature that they've invented. So, I mean, they don't really know how to deal with it. But I mean, a lot of it, the main goal is to just appeal to as many young people as possible. And I think that the extreme stuff and just kind of throwing everything back in the faces of this thought police that we now have just ruling over us. And I mean, young people, it was like this, not quite, I'm 31. So, I mean, it was when I was in high school 15 years ago, it was kind of starting to be like that. But now, I mean, it's like just these people, the kids are oppressed. I mean, they're just beaten down. And to have somebody just say, you know, just basically give a middle finger to all of this, this political correctness and all this thought policing, you know, it's incredibly empowering to say, well, I'm not going to respect any of the social restrictions that you're trying to place on me. And, you know, when you do that and you're funny at the same time, the humor, I mean, it opens everything up where you can't be things that you can't say otherwise you can say through humor. And I mean, I know a lot of older people in the white nationalist movement look at and they don't actually understand that it's humor. They think it's like I'm actually trying to be like Russell Crowe in Romper Stomper.
Okay. There's another reference that goes over my head, but
it's a great movie.
Well, I was just gonna say, you know what David Duke and I say, and people like Gilad Atzmon. I mean, Gilad Atzmon says that the essence of Jewish power is the ability to prevent the discussion of Jewish power. And what I'm always saying is, you know, once we can, if all we need to do is be able to talk about it, because once we talk about it, we have the means of liberating ourselves. Once we can talk about, once we can say that the media is run by Jews for Jewish interests, then people are going to stop listening to it, and it is no longer a power resource for them. Once we can talk about the financial system as being run by Jews for Jewish interests, people don't have to put their money in those banks. I mean, people have other options, and especially with the political system. Once people realize that all these candidates are just bought and sold at you know, Jewish slave markets, they don't have to vote for them anymore. So their power is it's all premised on this ability of preventing people from talking about it. And, you know, David Duke and I can talk about that. But when you use your humor and your troll army, which I want you to explain a little bit about, but when you're using this and you're reaching so many people, you're busting down these walls of political correctness that then other people are going to be able to drive tanks through. And that's how we liberate ourselves, it seems. Is that how you see yourself?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because when you have somebody like me, you know, who's now a part of the mainstream media narrative, I mean, I get in the media a lot now. When you have somebody and they're quoting me and these, you know, the stuff I say, it really opens up. Well, there are people out there that are saying this stuff. And it's like, you know, it does, like you say, I mean, it opens it up for people who are going to be a little bit more moderate to come in, because you're desensitizing people. I mean, that's what I create these try to create media spectacles nonstop. And what that is about is desensitizing people to these type of topics and discussion and the concept of, you know, whatever you want to call it, but, that whites have a right to exist. And, you know, I mean, basically, I say this a lot. Basically, political correctness is a religion, and you can look at how the Jews destroyed Christianity. Because, I mean, whether or not you're Christian, whatever, you know, I don't go into that discussion. But, you know, the Jews were definitely against this and wanted to remove the moral framework and the family structure that was attached to Christianity. So they actively sought to destroy this religion. And they didn't come at it with a bunch of facts about, you know, evolution or whatever. I mean, they had that as part of it. But mainly it was through, you know, gross propaganda and humor and just kind of mocking this idea of believing in, you know, the sky man and so on. So, you know, that's how I look at political correctness. You have to directly mock everything about it in order to break it down. As far as the trolling, I mean, it's this term, it's pretty old on the internet. It's somebody who, you know, basically gets pleasure from getting people to express absurd amounts of emotion over things that people have said to them on the internet. And when people do respond to this, this is called lulls. This is what you get. It's a satisfaction that you get when these people will respond emotionally to things that you said to them on the internet. And so this concept, which was developed in the early 2000s, my friend Weave was a big part of developing this concept on the internet of internet trolling for lulz. It can be applied to the establishment and the people that represent the establishment, and it's a weakness that they have. I mean, if you brutally mock these people and get them to express, you know, outrage at you, then you're using their own mechanisms to promote your agenda, and they can't help themselves. They can't help but respond to you when you create this spectacle on Twitter or wherever it is. I mean, we've just sent out all these flyers to networked printers across the United States, across North America. And, you know, it got this whole gigantic media storm of outrage, and all that does is give us attention and show that this is fun. You know, because I see a lot of the older people trying to recruit people, into the movement by saying, hey, you know, you have a duty. You have a duty to your race. You have to fulfill your duty. And it's like, you're not ever going to get anybody involved in anything when you come across like that. People are going to run away from you if you start telling people, well, you have to join us because you have a duty to join us. I mean, you have to offer people something. I mean, you have to say, well, if you're going to join us, you're going to get benefits personally. And, you know, right now the immediate benefit is that this is a lot of fun. People are having fun.
Uh-huh. Now, I noticed on your site within the past couple of days you had a poll, and I guess maybe you conduct polls from time to time. You had written an article about, you know, you try to do it Friday, but you can never remember what day of the week it is. But you had a poll asking your readers whether or not they're motivated by hate. And when I took the poll, it seemed like the you know, the poll numbers actually moved some. So I'm guessing it was a real poll, and you had 80% of people say that they were not motivated by hate, and so you are now requesting that you be called, that the Daily Stormer be referred to as a neo-Nazi white supremacist love site. Is that it? Or at or maybe a 20% hate site.
A 20% hate site. Yeah. I mean, it's a ridiculous concept that they, you know, they use these terms and then people go along with them and try and say, well, no, I'm not a hater, which is not what I was doing with that poll. I mean, I think that's obvious. I was mocking this whole concept of saying that people's political views are based on emotion, a specific emotion. And so that discounts the whatever they're saying, and you don't even have to respond to them because there's an emotion that you've projected onto them. You know, it's a ridiculous, nonsensical concept. I mean, I some people are very angry, but you know, you don't really, when I talk to people, hate is not really the emotion that most people seem to be feeling, but it's just another word that they use to try and shut you down and marginalize you, just shut you up and make it so you're some kind of demonic force. Whether it's, you know, hater, racist, neo-Nazi, white supremacist, etc. They have these words like you said earlier. It's about shutting down the discussion so that you can't talk. They want to make it so you can't talk at all, because if you can talk openly, I mean, if you or I were allowed to go on CNN and just share our views with the Jews, the people are going to see what the truth is. So the whole thing is about controlling discussion, because, you know, I mean, there's no real physical power. I mean, there is, because they have control of the government and so on, but they've done that through manipulation of what people think and how they feel.
Mm-hmm. Now, at the first half of this show, the first hour, I played a clips of an interview with Professor James Petras, and he was saying that the Zionist issue, the Jewish issue, is the, well, he was using the term Zionist, the Zionist power configuration is the key. It is the fundamental feature of our politics, our political system. And, you know, I say very similar things that you just cannot understand. That's why I'm not a political science professor anymore, because for me, how can I teach political science if I can't talk about the most fundamental issues? It would be like a physics teacher, you know, Don Advo was comparing physics, you know, gravity's role in physics to Jewish power in politics. How could I be a physics professor and not talk about gravity? As an academic, I felt like Galileo, who wasn't allowed to talk about the sun being at the center of the solar system when he knew it was true. Now, a lot of people, so I say a lot of things, and often it sounds very harsh. Now, a lot of people in our movement with similar views will say things like, well, of course, it's not all Jews, it's just a few people at the top or something like that. I say something that sounds a little bit similar, but is actually different, because I will point out, you know, I have, actually, you'd be surprised, I have a lot of Jewish friends. I have a lot of Jewish people I get along very well with, and I don't have any hostility towards Jewish people. Why do I say that? Am I saying that to protect me from charges of being an anti-Semite? No, they're going to call me that anyway. But what I'm saying is to the listeners, okay, you know, you have a Jewish friend that you like, fine. That doesn't mean what I'm saying about Jewish power and it's destructive, being a destructive force in our society, isn't true. You might know some very nice people, but the group behavior, right? I'm saying, even if you know somebody nice, the group behavior and the power structure is so destructive. Well, I hear you laughing, so I want to get your response.
Oh, my response?
Who was laughing?
I was laughing when he said he didn't know any nice Jews.
I don't know if that's the troll or just depends on where he lives. But okay, let's Don Advo, do you have a response or anything you want to ask to Andrew?
Well, I want to say, first of all, my compliments on the great success that you've achieved. I remember when your site was called Total Fascism, and I always liked a very direct, unapologetic, head-on approach to identify, to naming the Jew, I guess is the term that's used in our movement. You really name the Jew and you really come at him head-on, and that's what I think we have to do to break this thing open. There's no point in moderating. George Lincoln Rockwell once said, you're not going to sneak up on the Jews and take them unawares. You're going to have to, you know, they're going to know you're coming no matter what you do. So, I think your approach is really fantastic. You're younger and you're more modern than I am and some of the older guys. But I'll tell you, you've gained a lot of ground and you have my respect and my gratitude for everything that you've done.
Well, thanks, Don. It means a lot. It's good to have people understand what I'm doing, and it does mean a lot. And I think that different strategies are needed. You need to come at this from different angles, and you know, present different concepts and ideas. There's not anything anything bad that can happen from that.
Okay. Don.
No, go ahead.
When everybody's heard about
Well, we will be back after the break with more with the Daily Stormers website and the manager Andrew Anger.
Available. That's a.
Welcome back to the alternative media. So we're back with attorney Don Advo and Andrew Anglin of the Daily Stormer. Don, we were talking during the break, and you were talking about an anti-immigration group that you were involved in California. Do you want to share that story with our listeners?
Yeah, sure. It used to be called Save Our State, and it used to do a lot of great activism, and it had a website. Then it gradually died off and petered out because the main leaders of it were got tired and moved away. But I noticed there were Mexicans in it, Hispanics, and there were a couple of Jews in it, and it seemed like the purpose of the Jews was to kind of police things and function as a monitor. And I noticed all this Hispanics, when you try to talk about, I remember one time there was a thread posted by one of the members had young girls who were in school here in California in public schools. She was always talking about how her girls were subject to threats and sneers and violence, and it was hard for them to use the bathrooms and all this kind of thing. And I posted something about racially motivated violence against white children. And they came down really hard on me. They said, oh, you know, you can't talk about race on our website. And I said, well, I know there's something so vile they can't be defended. I didn't know that white children were among them. I thought all children could be defended against racially motivated indignities and motivated violence. And when you get in these organizations where you have MUDs and Jews, they're always looking around and their antenna twitching like cockroaches, you know, and they're always looking for a way to step on you and crush you. I've seen this in so many groups. I saw this Congressman Dana Rohrabacher showed up at some town hall meetings. He was traveling with a captain in the Israeli Defense Force. And I thought, this is the strangest goddamn thing I've ever seen. And he was in uniform. He was in his Israeli uniform, and he was some little rat-faced guy with thick glasses, and he kind of, you know, hunched over, and he kind of looked around nervously, his eyes darting back and forth, like he was some kind of rat or something. I mean, I hate to be that graphic about it, but, you know, when you hear the term rat-faced Jew, I mean, that was this guy. And I thought it was bizarre. I wanted to ask Rohrabacher, who, on which end of the leash are you standing here? Are you know, is the leash around your neck, or is the leash in your hand? Who is this guy, and why is he here? You know, it's, I don't know.
They try to get in any groups. This is what they do, and they police them. That's their entire goal. And that's what people that have these white nationalist conferences inviting these Jews, it's like, well, what are you doing? These people, I mean, firstly, they have no dog in this fight. I mean, they can go to Israel if they don't like diversity in the United States.
So, they have a dog in the fight, and it's a dog that's trying to rip our fucking throats out. That's the dog they have in the fight.
Family show, Don. Family show. Even if it's a trolling show, it's a family. I think we are broadcast over the airwaves, so we have the FCC to worry about.
Sorry,
that's okay.
You don't have a time delay.
I don't think we have. Not under my control. I noticed in trolling though. Trolls have to make free use of our entire vocabulary, entire English vocabulary. A lot of that language goes out. I wanted to ask a little bit about the trolling techniques. I remember when I was a kid. I mean, we had Bullwinkle who didn't want you to switch channels because he wanted you to come back to the next episode 2 days later. And he actually told us kids to remove the dial from the TV sets, and a lot of kids did. Gene Shepard, who had a radio show that I referenced in the last hour, he told his listeners all to go down to bookstores and ask for a book. I think it was, what was it called? I Liberatore. And everybody went down to their bookstores. This was a New York radio show. They went down and asked for I Liberatore. And, the book, you know, it wasn't in supply, so the bookstores were ordering it. And they would order it, to the wholesalers. And of course, the New York Times bestsellers list is, at least at the time, was based on wholesale book orders. And so this non-existent book by a non-existent author got onto the New York Times bestsellers list. So that was trolling, 50 years ago. What types of things do you get your troll army to do?
Well, those are pretty good examples. I was not aware of either of those. But that's the same concept. Yeah. Right now, I mean, basically Twitter is the best place to do this because you can directly contact people. Right. I mean, famous people or you know, journalists for the New York Times.
And they will answer you?
They will. Yeah. I mean, they'll at least see the messages. Sometimes they'll answer you. I got kicked off of Twitter for what I think was a great troll, where I used the Mizzou when they were having these revolts at Mizzou.
University of Missouri. Yeah.
I used their hashtags, and I said that the KKK was on campus running amok and burning crosses and so on. And they actually organized physical protests against the KKK on campus. I mean, some of these got 30,000 retweets. Some of the tweets that I sent out, I changed my profile to a black guy. And I are we going to break?
Yeah, we're coming up on the break. We'll be back after the break with more of this discussion. And we are back to the alternative media. I am your host, Patrick Slattery. We are with Attorney Don Advo and Andrew Anglin. And Andrew Anglin, you don't want to apologize.
Yeah, no, I think that that's it's always a sign of weakness to apologize for anything and to backtrack on anything. I mean, you should say what you believe and not offer any. You know, you don't need to offer caveats. You don't need to, and you certainly don't ever want to apologize for anything. I was watching some John Wayne movie, and he says to some guy, he says, "Don't ever apologize. It makes you look weak." And this is the fact. And you know, I think that so much of the older white nationalist movement was fixated on trying to go along with the mainstream narrative because they thought it equaled respectability. But it's just that they can keep pushing you as far as they want you to go once you've decided that you're going to go along and, you know, not say the words that they say you're not supposed to say. And you know, always kind of say, well, I, you know, like this thing, or people are saying nationalism for all people. Well, all other people already have nationalism. So what's the point of saying, well, I believe in nationalism for the blacks? I mean, they're not having this issue. The Chinese are not having this issue. The Japanese are not having this issue. You know, the Mexicans aren't having this issue. So you don't need to say, I mean, I think that we need to speak from a position of strength because that's what's attractive to people. You can look at Donald Trump. I mean, show me where he's apologized. He's been asked to apologize probably since this campaign started 200 times, and he's not done it once. He will not apologize for anything. And this is what people like. I mean, they're sick of weakness. And, you know, that's the most important thing I think to remember is that people are attracted to strength, not political correctness.
If we were in a normal, healthy society, I'd find, you know, apologizing is, you know, if you do something wrong, that's fine. But we're in this situation where, you know, the other side does atrocity after atrocity. You know, they talk about, I mean, you think of the Bolshevik Revolution and the Holodomor, or more recently in the 1990s, the demographic collapse of Russia. Just atrocity after atrocity. There's never an apology. And if you're in a relationship and only one side ever apologizes, yeah, and then it becomes weakness so I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, and I mean, when you're not doing anything wrong, there shouldn't be. I mean, these are apologies for you know, offending the narrative. This whole concept that you have to say, well, no, we're not like that. We're not like these people that you're saying we're like. We're some, because I mean, that almost just reinforces the idea that you are just a slimy, lying type person when you say, well, we're not like that. So, I think that, you know, a movement should say what they believe and not feel like they need to explain, you know, to make sure that it doesn't hurt people's feelings. So that's one of the principles that I've really tried to employ is that, you know, the people's feelings are not something that I care about.
Mm-hmm. And
you know, what matters is the truth.
Yeah, and I notice on your site, you know, the way you talk about Donald Trump and I guess calling him the Lord Emperor, and I notice Melania is the Empress Melania, and Donald Trump is our what is he, the glorious leader. Kind of reminds me of North Korea. I should have had some North Korean music ready for today, because they had the great leader, We Dehan Surungim Kim Il Dong, and it was just amazing. But the glorious leader. Yet on the Dr. Duke show a couple of days ago, you said, "Well, of course, if Donald Trump gets elected, you're going to be his number one critic."
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, Donald Trump, in my view, is a guy who likes being liked, and this is, I think, what he's an actual populist, because he wants to do, you know, whatever the people want him to do. I mean, if you look at what he says and the positions that he takes, he's taking positions that are the positions that he knows the people feel very strongly about. I mean, this has all been researched clearly for decades. The first time he mentioned running for president was in the 80s. So, I mean, he's come up with positions that are something that the overwhelming majority of white Americans sympathize, I mean, especially Republicans, sympathize with. So, you know, I think that when he wins, we're going to have to keep pushing him to go in this same direction that he's laid out already. I mean, I think he's going to build the wall. I think the first day that he gets in, he's going to sign an order to build the wall. But, you know, some of these other things, we got to just make sure that he does them. And I think that, you know, putting pressure on him is going to be necessary. And I think we have the ability to do that. And I think that he'll have the ability to respond. So, I mean, I'm very hopeful about a Trump presidency. But yes, I believe that we do need to be very critical of him once he gets in office. That will be necessary.
Right. And as a political scientist, the way I see politics in this country, you know, what fuels politics, you've got money and votes, money and popularity. Which is more important? Well, money comes first, because money screens out everybody up until the last two. And then you have this general election between two candidates who have the that big U in the big circle, the kosher stamp of appeal, of approval. And so the voter just gets, you know, to decide between Tweedledee and Tweedledum. But Tweedledee and Tweedledum, at that point, then they care about people, about their popularity. They care about votes. Donald Trump, because he doesn't need their money, all he needs to worry about is, you know, approval from the people. And that makes him a completely different character. And it is just a massive opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's also trolled the media so much. I mean, you see the way he manages the media, and gets literally, it would end up being, if you tallied up the amount of media that he's gotten, it's in the billions. I mean, these other people are not even able to get on shows. They've accused the media. Ted Cruz says the media is involved in a conspiracy to make it always about Donald Trump. But the fact is, Donald Trump understands how to play these people.
Well, he understands how to play it
and stuff.
And they don't always want to be on the media. In fact, you hear them sometimes, like when Cruz was saying that, he said it to Sean, who was it? Sean Hannity. I think Sean Hannity said that, you know, I've asked you to be on the, well, Sean Hannity's had him on the show, but somebody else was, from one of these, news shows says, we've called you to be on the show numerous times and you won't come on. They don't want to come on because they have lots of money and they can buy airtime, they can control their narrative. If they're on a show, you know, somebody might throw them a question. You might have somebody throws them a question they don't like. But Donald Trump, because he doesn't care if he gets a question that he doesn't like, he's different. He's able to control the narrative. And I guess, is he a troll? Do you think he's a troll?
Yeah, absolutely. He's the king of the trolls. I mean, because he's using, I mean, this is what I probably didn't articulate it very well before, but he's using the media to promote himself, the media that's against him. So basically the attacks on him end up reading like an advertisement for him. they're like, oh, well, Donald Trump's evil. He wants to deport all the Mexicans and get rid of the Muslims. And it's like, well, yeah, you're saying he's evil. So, I mean, basically the entire media has become an advertisement for him. And I think that, you know, I mean, this is the whole concept of that we don't really have any power. And you know, even a billionaire standing against the international Jewish apparatus doesn't have any real power. So he's using their power to push his own agenda. And this is a principle that I've always tried to employ.
Okay. We have a caller. We have Sam in Florida. Sam, welcome to the show. Sam, are you there?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's pretty great. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question for Andrew?
I was just going to say the Mizzou troll was probably one of the greatest trolls I've ever seen in my life on Twitter.
Thanks, sir.
And, you know, you got to say, like, people have to be on Twitter. You have to come back, Andrew. You got to get back on that. You got to use a proxy or something and come back on because we've missed you.
No, I think I'm permanently banned. I mean, I could get a fake account, I guess, but it would just get blocked. But, you know, it wouldn't be as fun if I wasn't using my real name either.
That's true, but still, you know, you could mobilize the troops on there. It'd be pretty funny. But well, I was going to ask
with this Russian Jew, didn't we? Have you seen this over the last couple of days?
Are you talking about Yotz? What was it, Yofi? Julia Yofi, is that her name?
Yeah, Yulia Yofi. She's a
Yulia.
Russian.
Yulia. Pretty okay. Excuse me.
But we have a ton of trolls LARPing as Jews right now that are active. We have a couple of rabbis that are on there, and there's a Herschel. I can't really think of his name, but they're actually like, they're doing really well at fooling people, but dropping red pills at the same time. So it's pretty ingenious stuff. But I was going to ask, does Don have a Twitter?
Me?
Don, do you have a Twitter account?
I do not.
Don, you have to get a Twitter account and join in on the fun, because not only is it fun, I mean, you could bet, you know, basically like if you look at Ricky Vaughn, and that whole group of trolls, I mean, they basically destroyed neoconservatism with their trolling.
Yeah, he's a hero.
That's how effective it could be.
Well, just getting back to Yulia Yofi, and you know, I know that you've been having this trolling interaction with her. When she's crying foul, you know, she says, I had to flee Russia 26 years ago. I had to flee anti-Semitism. And okay, 26 years ago. You know, I've seen her say this, you know, multiple times regarding your exchange with her. 26 years ago was 1990. The Soviet Union had not been split apart yet. And it was really split apart by Jewish power. And then once it was split apart, they just jumped in and completely as my first guest, Professor Petrus was saying, they just went after all of the resources of the Russian people. There was a demographic collapse that happened after 1990. So I don't, you know, if the Jews were in a position post 1990 to take over the whole country, I don't know how much anti-Semitism there could have been. The Russians certainly had their defenses down. As soon as Yeltsin took over, I mean, he appointed, you know, prime ministers and who were Jewish. He appointed the privatization minister, Anatoly Chubais was a Jew. And then they imported these Jewish advisors from the United States, like Lawrence Summers who and Jeffrey Sachs, who connected you know, there were some well-connected young Jews in the Russian government who got connected to people like George Soros, who funded them, and they were able to buy these privatized assets of the state on the cheap at bargain basement prices. And there you've got your, 13 out of 14 oligarchs, all Jewish. They took over the economy and starved out the Russian people. And then here she is. saying that she had to flee a couple of years before that because of anti-Semitism. I mean, give me a break. It's the anti-Semite card. They can always play it. So,
well, not anymore. It's now coming across as ridiculous. I mean, Russians do hate the Jews because they're always getting, you know, screwed over.
They
by
got
them.
The short, I mean, end of the stick big time, yeah. A few times in the last century.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a complete disaster, Judaism and or Jewishness in Russia. But, you know, did she have to flee? I don't know. I mean, there's Jews still living in Russia now, and they say it's, you know, so anti-Semitic. So, you know,
a lot of them did pretty well, too. Became billionaires.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's this whining and crying, and people are sick of it. So when you get these people to whine and cry about jokes on the internet and just flip out, I mean, she's flipping out, and it's funny too. I mean, it's very funny. She's saying that, I don't even know if this is true. I almost think it is true because it's like too funny for her to have come up with that. There's people calling and saying, we want to follow up that you ordered a, overnight casket, you know. you know, it's very funny, and she's saying that these are death threats, and people are like, I mean, I think a normal person, especially a normal young person, looking at that is going to say, well, no, this is not a death threat. This is people are being funny, and because, you know, I mean, they don't like something that you wrote, and they're responding with a sort of malicious humor. And, you know, I mean, this, and they keep pushing this idea that everything is dangerous. Like the internet is dangerous, and there's people, I mean, I don't know of a single person who's ever been killed by an internet troll. Some of them have killed themselves. I mean, it has happened. It did used to happen that people killed themselves. But I don't think an internet troll has ever gone and got somebody. So, I mean, they keep talking about safety. And this goes to the feminists and the whole SJW movement. But these people that Gamergate is always harassing. What's her name?
Some Canadian woman who...
She's Armenian-Canadian.
Armenian-Canadian, yeah. I vaguely know who you're talking about.
Sarkeesian, and the one who had sex with all those journalists, Zoe Quinn. So, and they actually got Twitter to put together something called the Trust and Safety Committee. So, I mean, these people are equating emotional pain with physical danger. That if somebody calls you a name and it hurts your feelings, then you're in physical danger. And you can expose all this stuff by what they say triggering, and you can keep doing it. And it just they expose their own selves by how bizarre and outrageous their responses are to people making fun of them on the internet. And I think that, you know, this whole thing with Trump, anti-Semitic Trump supporters are sending gas chamber jokes to Jewish journalists. I mean, it's, you know, it's a very good spectacle to have. And when you can create these spectacles nonstop, then you're involved in the narrative, which you never could have gotten into otherwise.
Okay, we will be back after the break with more of the alternative media. Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. Bum, 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 bum. Make him the cutest that I've ever seen. Bum, 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 bum. Give him two lips like roses and clover. Bum, 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 bum. Then tell him that his lonesome night. We are back. This is the Alternative Media. I am your host, Patrick Slattery, and we are with Andrew Anglin. And Andrew, you have agreed to be here for the next hour. That's great. I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
So we were talking during the break, and you know, about the power of humor, but also how you know, humor, it's, we're expected, you know, white majority is expected to be the butt of jokes, but the moment
anybody else is the butt of a joke, then it's hate speech, and it's, you know, how could you think such a thing? It's horrible. Like Saturday Night Live, you have, it's the biggest comedy show on TV, and you have Jamie Foxx. I guess we're up against them right now. I think it's on right now. Jamie Foxx comes on and says, "Yeah, I was in a movie, Django. I got to kill all the white people. How great is that?" And everybody cheers. And, you know, we're supposed to be okay with it. And I would be okay with it, people making jokes like that, except that you can't make your jokes without getting the ADL after you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think people know this, that that they're making these jokes constantly about mocking white people nonstop. I mean, it's all throughout the Jewish media is basically just a gigantic mockery of white people. And even when they use Jews in these movies and these TV shows, they're not really telling you that they're Jews. They're presenting them as neurotic, obsessive, weirdo white people. And, you know, they constantly, I mean, you know, you just look at The Simpsons, or that first one that did it was Married with Children, where the white male is just this stupid, pathetic, fat waste who just drinks all the time and eats and doesn't even know what's going on. And of course, in both The Simpsons and Married with Children, also this Family Guy show, all these
Family
shows.
Family Guy, yeah.
It's the man, the white man is like the most pathetic creature on earth that acts like a child. And then of course the woman, the wife is in charge of everything. And she's the one who can basically treat the husband like another one of the kids. And you know, so it's just a nonstop attack on white men, the entire media. And everybody kind of knows that instinctively. They're aware of this fact. So, I mean, when you switch it around and put it on the Jews or the mm-hmm. blacks or whoever, you know, the people understand, I think, just on a very primal level that we have a right to do this, just like they're doing to us. So, you know, I think that most people are not actually offended by this type of thing. I think that they're supposed to be offended. They're programmed to react with offense. But I think once you can get past that by being funny enough, then it doesn't work the same way.
Right. And, you know, you could even go back as far as the 1970s, talk about Archie Bunker, you know, the stupid, yes, bigoted, white person. And who created him was Norman Lear, who was just massively, influential in the 1970s, and pushing in this direction of basically defaming white people. And, you know, he had, shows with funny blacks who always had, Even if they, you know, whatever foibles they had, they usually had morality on their side.
They were benign.
Okay, we have one more hour. We will be back after the top of the hour with more of the alternative media.
He's the Sheik of Arabi. At night when he's asleep, into his tent he'll creep, and the stars that shine above will light their way to love. He rules his land with sheep, the Sheik of Arabia.